Osho, a bird on the wing, talks on Zen. Discourse number 3, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Teaching the Zen master, Kakuin, and asked, "Is there such a thing as heaven and hell?" "Who are you?" Kakuin said. "I am Chief Samurai of the Emperor," thought he. "You, a samurai," said Kakuin. "With a face like that, you look more like a beggar." At this, the soldier became very angry and he drew his sword. Standing calmly in front of him, Kakuin said, "Here have opened the gates of hell." Perceiving the master's composure, the samurai put his sword away and bowed. And Hakuin said, "Here open the gates of heaven."
Heaven exists. If you go in search of them, you will never find them anywhere. Because they are within you. They are psychological. Mind is heaven and mind is hell. And mind is the capacity to become either. But people go on thinking everything somewhere outside. We go on looking for everything always outside, because to be inward it very difficult. We are outgoing. So if somebody says there is a God, we look at the sky. Somewhere sitting there will be the divine person. In a school in America, one psychologist was working and he asked the small children about God. What they think about God, because children have a more clear perception and they are less cunning and more true and they are more representative of the human mind, unperverted. So he asked the children and then their answers were collected. The conclusion was very ridiculous. In conclusion, almost all the children depicted God something like this, that God is an old man, very tall, bearded, and very dangerous. He creates fear. If you don't follow him, he will throw you in hell. If you pray and follow him, he will give you paradise and all the pleasures. And he is sitting on a throne in the sky and watching everybody. And you cannot escape him. Even in your bathroom, he is looking. The outgoing mind projects everything outside. This is your God. Don't laugh and don't think that this is a children's conception. No, this is you. This is how you think about God. A cosmic spy. And always in search to condemn, to throw you in hell, to punish. And very ferocious. revengeful. That's why all the religions are based on fear. If you do this, you will be appreciated, awarded. If you don't do this, you will be punished. But the base seems to be fear. And God seems just to be a very powerful emperor sitting on the throne in the heaven. The whole conception is foolish, but human. Human mind is foolish. The whole conception is anthropocentric. In the Bible it is said, God created a man in his own image. Reality seems to be quite otherwise. Man created God in his own image. We have projected God in our own image. It is a blow up of the human mind. A bigger human mind, that's all. Remember, if you think God outside somewhere than you, you have not even started the first step of being religious. And the same happens with all the conceptions. Heaven is without, hell is without. As if there exists nothing like within. What is within you? The moment you think of the within, it seems everything goes empty. What is within you? The world is without, sex is without, sin is without, virtue is without, God, heaven, hell, everything is without. What is within you? Who are you? The moment you think of the within, the mind goes blank. There is nothing. And in reality, everything is within. The all is just a projection. Fear is within you. Then the fear becomes projected in a hell. Hell is just a projected image on the screen of the fear that is within you. The anger, the jealousy, and all that is poisonous in you. All that is evil in you. And heaven is again a projected image on the screen of all that is good, beautiful, blissful within you. The devil is the fallen human being. God is the risen human being. God is the ultimate possibility of your beatitude. Devil is the ultimate fall of you. There is nobody like devil existing somewhere. You will never meet him unless you become him. And you will never encounter God unless you become God. In the East, religions transcended this anthropocentric attitude very, very long ago in the past. Eastern religions are non-anthropocentric. They say you cannot encounter God, you can become. When you reach to the ultimate point of existence, there will be no God to receive you and welcome you. Only you will be there in your godliness. So this can be said, and I go on insisting, that there exists no God, but existence is divine. There is just no one like a person, a super person, no one. God is non-existential, but the godliness is existential. The moment I say godliness, it becomes something inverted. The moment you say God, you have projected it. This story is beautiful. This Zen master Hakum is one of the rare flowerings. A warrior came to him, a samurai, a great soldier. And he asked, "Is there any hell? Is there any heaven? And if there is a hell and a heaven, where are the gates from where to enter? How to avoid the hell and how to choose the heaven? Where are the gates?" A simple warrior, and warriors are always simple. It is difficult to find a businessman who is simple. He is always cunning, clever, otherwise he cannot be a businessman. A warrior is always simple, otherwise he cannot be a warrior. He knows only two things, life and death, nothing much. And his life is always at stake, always gambling. He is a simple man, that's why businessman could not create a single Mahavir, a single Buddha, a single Krishna or Ram. Even Brahmins could not create a Ram, a Buddha, a Mahavir, because Brahmins are also cunning, cunning in a different way. They are also businessmen of a different world, of the others. They deal in business, not of this world, of the other world. Their priesthood is a business. Their religion is a mathematics, arithmetic. They are also clever, very clever. More clever than the businessman, because the businessman is limited to this world. Their cunningness goes beyond. They always think of the other world, the rewards they are going to get there, and their rituals, and their whole mind is concerned how to achieve more pleasure in the other world. But they are concerned with pleasure, they are businessmen. So even Brahmins could not create a Buddha. This is strange. All the 24 Tirthankaras of Jains are Kshatriyas, warriors. Buddha is a warrior. Ram and Krishna are warriors. Simple people, with no cunning in their mind, with no arithmetic. They know only two things, life and death. So this simple warrior came to Hakun to ask, where is heaven and where is hell? And he has not come to learn any doctrine. He wants to know where is the gate, so that I can avoid hell and I can enter heaven. And Hakun replied in a way only a warrior can understand. If a Brahmin was there, scriptures would have been needed. He should have quoted Vedas, Upanishads, Bible, Quran, then a Brahmin will understand. Because all that exists for a Brahmin is in the scriptures. A scripture is the world. Brahman lives in the world, the verbal. If a businessman was there, he would not understand the answer that Hakun has given, the response, the way he acted with this warrior. A businessman always asks, how much is the price of your heaven? What is the cost? And how I can attain it? So what should I do? How much virtuous should I be? What are the coins? What should I do so the heaven can be attained? He always asks for the price. I have heard one beautiful story. It happened in the beginning when God created the world. The God came on the earth and asked different races. He came with 10 commandments, the 10 rules of life. The Jews have given so much significance to those 10 rules, and the Christians also, and the Mohammedans also, because all these 3 religions are Jewish. The source is the Jew. And Jew is the perfect businessman. So God came to ask, he came to Hindus and asked, would you like to have 10 commandments? So the Hindus said, what is the first? We must have a sample, because we don't know what these 10 commandments are. So the God said, thou shalt not kill. Hindus said, it will be difficult. Life is complex. Killing is involved. It is a great cosmic play. Birth is there, death is there, fight, competition is there. And if all competition is taken away, the whole thing will become flat, dull. So, we don't like. These commandments will destroy the whole game. So he went to Mohammedans and said, thou shalt not commit adultery. Gave one example to them also, because they also asked, what is the sample? Mohammedans said, this will be difficult. Life will lose all beauty. At least 4 wives are needed. And you call it adultery? This is all that life can give. This is all that a virtuous man should have. And who knows of the other world? This is the world. And you have given it to us to enjoy. And now you have come with these commandments. This is contradictory. So he went around and around, and then he came to Moses, the leader of the Jews. Moses never asked for the sample. The moment God said, I have got 10 commandments, and he was afraid if Moses says no, then nobody is left. He has asked everybody and nobody is ready. So this is the last hope. But Muhammad, when God said, would you like to have these 10 commandments? What Moses asked, he asked, how much they cost? This is how a perfect businessman thinks. The first thing is to know what is the cost. And God said nothing. Then Moses said, then I will have 10. If they cost nothing, then there is no problem. That's how 10 commandments were bought. But this samurai was not a Jew. He was not a businessman. He was a warrior. He had come with a simple question. He was not interested in scriptures. He was not interested in caste. He was not interested really in any verbal answer. He was interested in reality. What Hakyun did? He said, "Who are you?" The warrior said, "I am a samurai." It is a very proud thing to be a samurai in Japan. It means a perfect warrior, a man who can give his life in a single minute. He will not hesitate. For him, life and death are just a game. So he said, "I am a samurai, and I am a leader of samurais, and even the emperor pays respect to me." Hakun laughed and said, "You and a samurai, you look like a beggar." The pride was hurt. The ego hemorrhaged. The samurai forgot for what he has come. He took out his sword. He was just going to kill this Hakun. He forgot that he has come to this master to ask where the gate of heaven and where is the gate of hell. And then samurai laughed and he said, "This is the gate of hell. This sword, this anger, this ego. Here opens the gate." This is what a warrior can understand. Immediately he followed. "This is the gate." He put down back his sword in the seat and Hakun said, "Here opens the gate of heaven." Hell and heaven are within you. Both the gates are within you. When you are unconscious, behaving unconsciously, the gate of hell. When you become alert and conscious, the gate of heaven. What happened to this samurai? When he was just going to kill Hakun, was he conscious? Was he conscious what he is going to do? Was he conscious for what he has come here? Every consciousness disappears. When ego takes over, you cannot be alert. Ego is the drug, the intoxicant, which makes you completely unconscious. You act, but the act comes from the unconscious, not from your consciousness. And whenever any act comes from the unconscious, the door of hell is open. Whatsoever you do, if you do it in a way that you are not aware what you are doing, unawareness is the gate of hell. Immediately the samurai became alert. When Hakun said, "This is the gate, you have already opened it," suddenly the very situation must have created alertness. Just imagine what would happen to you if you were the warrior, if you were the samurai. Sword in hand, just going to kill a single moment more, and Hakun's head would have been cut, separated from the body, a single moment more. Sword in hand. And Hakun says, "This is the gate of hell." This is not a philosophical answer. No master answers in a philosophical way. Philosophy exists only for mediocre, unenlightened minds. A master responds. The response is not verbal, it is total. Hakun is playing with danger. This man may have killed him completely. But that is not the point. if you even kill me and that makes you alert, it is worth. Hakum played the game. A single moment lost and this man would have killed him. In the right moment, Hakun says, this is the gate. You may not have heard about samurais. If you are going to kill a samurai, your sword is in hand. It is just going to touch his neck. Samurais have a particular sound. This is a mantra. And a samurai is standing before you without any weapon. He cannot protect. He will just say a single word so loudly that all your energy will go and you will become as if dead, a statue. He may say simply, hey, and you will become static and the hand will not move. Because that sound will give a hammering on the heart, which controls everything. The hand will become static, and the mind will be shocked, and all activity will disappear. You cannot kill a samurai, even if he is without weapons. Even a sound will become a protection. If you are with a gun, your hands will not move, or you will miss the aim, and just a sound. But the sound has to be made in a particular way, so that it goes deep in the heart and changes completely your activity, the pattern of your activity. This Hakun, when he said, this is the gate, the samurai must have remained static. In that static state, when all activity ceases, you become alert. Activity, occupation in the mind is unconsciousness. You are continuously occupied. Even for a single moment, you are not unoccupied. Occupation is your drug. That's why when you are without any activity, you feel uneasy. You may start reading the same newspaper again. You will start doing something or other. You may open the window and close it again. Some activity is needed, otherwise your unconsciousness will break and you will become conscious. So Zen says, if a person can sit 6 hours without doing anything, he will become enlightened. Just for 6 hours. But 6 hours is really too long. 6 minutes, I say, is enough. Even 6 seconds will do. If you can be completely, absolutely without activity for 6 seconds, what will happen? When you are not occupied, you cannot be unconscious. When you are unoccupied, the whole energy becomes consciousness. A tremendous release. The energy is engaged in occupation. Mind is thinking, body is working. You are occupied, the whole energy is moving in activity and is being dissipated into the world. If you think, you are dissipating energy. Because each thought takes energy, needs energy. Continuously you are thinking and dissipating energy for nothing. Just dissipating. Activity needs energy. Your infinite source of energy is being dissipated continuously. You are leaking from everywhere. That's why you feel so weak, so frustrated, so important. This impotence feels like helplessness, and you are omnipotent, and you feel impotent. You have all the sources of infinite energy within you. You are related to the cosmic source, but you feel impotent because dissipating continuously. Even for a single moment, if thought stops, activity is no more there. You have become like a statue, unmoving within, without, no movement, either of body or of mind. A tremendous energy is released. Where it will go now? No activity, then it cannot go without. You become a pillar of energy, a flame of energy. Everything becomes conscious inside. Everything is lighted. The whole being is filled with light. This must have happened to this virus. Stopped, sword in hand, Hakum just before him, a master, an enlightened master, the eyes of Hakum laughing, the face smiling, and the gate of hell open. He understood. The sword went back into the sea. While putting the sword back into the seat, he must have been totally silent. Peaceful. The anger has disappeared, and the energy that was moving in the anger has become silence. If you suddenly awake in the middle of anger, you will feel such a peace you have never felt before. Because energy was moving, suddenly it stops. You will have a silence, immediate silence. You fall into your inner being. And the fall is so sudden, you will become aware. It is not a slow fall. It is so sudden that you cannot remain unaware. You can remain unaware with only routine things, gradual things. You move so slowly that you don't feel the movement. Sudden movement from activity to no activity, from thought to no thought, from mind to no mind, this warrior realized. As the sword was going back into the seat, Hakun said, "And here opens the door of heaven." Silence is the door. Inner peace is the door. Non-violence is the door. Love, a compassion is the door. Heaven and hell are not geographical. They are psychological. They are your psychology. And this is not a question to be decided on the last day of judgment. Human mind is so clever to avoid, to escape. Christians, Mormons, Jews, they have created a concept of the last day when everybody is to be judged. You will be taken out of your grave, judged, and then those who follow Jesus, those who have been good, behaved, they will go to the heaven, and those who have misbehaved, those who have not followed Jesus, those who have not been in the church, this would be thrown in the hell. And this hell is going to be eternal. Christian hell is one of the most ridiculous things. Eternal. No end to it then. This seems to be just injustice, sheer injustice. Whatsoever sin you may have committed, no punishment can be just which is eternal. Bertrand Russell somewhere has joked that if I calculate all my sins, sins that I have committed and sins that I have not committed, only brooded over, if they are also included, then the hardest judge cannot send me to jail more than for 4 years. And Christianity sends you forever. Bertrand Russell has written a book, Why I Am Not a Christian. And this is one of his arguments, and a beautiful argument, because the whole thing seems to be ridiculous. And Christians believe only in one life. So if Hindus say that you have committed millions of sins in millions of lives, it may even look logical to send a person for eternal hell, but Christians, they believe only in one life. A 70 years life, how can you commit so much sin to deserve eternal hell? If you continuously commit sin every moment of 70 years, then to eternal hell doesn't look just. The whole thing seems to be revengeful. So God is not throwing you in the hell because of your sins, just because you were disobedient. Just because you were rebellious. Just because you didn't listen to Him. This seems to be a revenge. Revenge can be injustice. Punishment, it seems ridiculous. But human mind has created a last judgment day. Why? Why wait for the last judgment day? Mind always postpones, pushes things ahead. The problem is not right here and now. It is a question of last judgment day. We will see. The problem is not urgent. We will see what happens. And there are ways and means. In the last moment you can follow Jesus. In the last moment you can surrender and say to God that I was a sinner. Confess and be forgiven. And God, it's infinite compassion, and God is love. So He is going to forgive you. Christians have evolved a technique of confession. You commit sin, go to the priest and confess. Confessed, you are relieved. If you confess honestly, you are ready to commit it again, because the past sin is forgiven. And once you know the trick, once you know the key that you can commit a sin and can be forgiven, who is going to prevent you from committing more? So the same people go on coming every Sunday to the priest, and they go on confessing. And sometimes ego is such that people have confessed sins that they have never committed. Ego is such that if you start confessing, you may be so much involved in it that you may start confessing since you have not committed. Because to be a great sinner is such ego fulfilling. And then greater the sinners, greater will be the forgiveness of the divine. It is said that Leo Tolstoy has written his autobiographical notes. And those who have been studying Leo Tolstoy deeply say that many sins that he says he has committed, he never committed. He is enjoying. Jean-Jacques Rousseau has written Confessions, his autobiography, and the sins he says he never committed. And the same is the possibility with Mahatma Gandhi. In his autobiography, the things that he goes on depicting that he committed, maybe exaggerations, because this is the how the ego works. Whatsoever you say, it goes to the extreme, and then there is a beautiful fully feeling that I have confessed and now I am relieved, now I am forgiven. I was a sinner in the past, but now I am a saint. And if you were a small sinner, how can you be a great saint? To be a great saint, you must have been a great sinner. Last judgment, confession, are tricks of the mind. Heaven and hell are not in the end, they are here and now. Every moment the door opens. Every moment you go on wavering between hell and heaven. It is a moment-to-moment question. It is urgent. In a single moment you can move from hell to heaven and from heaven to hell. This is the meaning of this story. In a single moment, not even a single moment, has passed. And Hakun says, this is the gate of hell. Now the gate of hell opens. And not a single moment has passed. And he says, look, this is the gate of heaven. Heaven and hell are not very distant. They are neighbors. Only a small fence divides them. You can jump that fence even without a gate. And you go on jumping from this to that. In the morning you may be in the heaven, by the evening you are in hell. This moment heaven and that moment hell. Because it is just an attitude, just a state of your mind, just how you are feeling. In a single life, many times you visit the hell and many times the heaven. In a single day also. There is a beautiful story of a disciple of Mahavir. He was a great king. He renounced, became a disciple of Mahavir. Was very ascetic, austere. Was doing whatsoever Mahavir said to the very extreme. His name is spread all over the country. His name was Prasanna Chandra. Even kings started coming to pay homage to him. Another king, Bimbisar, who had been a friend to this Prasanna Chandra when he was also a king, came to the cave where Prasanna Chandra was standing, naked, under the sun, with closed eyes. Prasanna Chandra bowed, Bimbisar bowed down before this Prasanna Chandra and thought in his mind, when the time will come when I will also become so much peaceful, silent, blissful, this man has achieved. Just a stitch. And then he went to Mahavir, to Prasanna Chandra's master. He was also near, somewhere in the same forest. And he asked Mahavir, he asked Bhagavan, just before coming to you, I had been to Prasanna Chandra. He was standing with closed eyes, so blissful, so heavenly. He has achieved. When the moment will come for me, I am not so fortunate. I feel jealous. I have a question. If Prasanna Chandra died that very moment when I was there, paying my respect to him, where he will reach, which heaven he will attain? Because Jains say there are 7 heavens and 7 hells. Mahavir said he will fall to the 7th hell. Bimbisar couldn't understand. He was puzzled and confused. He said, what you are saying? 7th hell? And he was standing so silent and so peaceful and so meditative. He was in such an ecstasy. And if he falls to the 7th hell, what will happen to me? Are there more hells beyond the 7th? No, you must be joking. Tell me the truth. Mahavir said, this is the truth. Just before you, few people passed. They also went to pay homage to Prasanna Chandra. And they started gossiping around him, and he heard. And the door of hell opened. Those people were coming from his capital, old capital where he was the king. And they said, this fool has renounced all. And the prime minister, to whom he has given the whole responsibility to run the kingdom, is a thief. He is looting. He is destroying. And when this Prasanna Chandra's son will become major, he is minor, when he will become major, and when he will come to the kingdom, there will be left nothing. And this fool is standing here with closed eyes. Prasanna Chandra heard this. Suddenly the door of hell opened. He forgot. He was a samurai also, a warrior, a kshatriya. He forgot completely that he has renounced. He forgot that there is no sword. He forgot completely that he is a monk now. This samurai who had gone to Hakun, he had a sword. This Prasanna Chandra had none. He was standing naked. But he pulled out his sword. The sword that was not there. Just in imagination, he forgot completely that he is a sannyasin now. The whole thing became so burdensome, so much anxiety was created by the news. He pulled his sword out of the sea. And he said, I am alive. What that prime minister thinks, I will go and cut his head. I am still there. Just because of an old habit. Whenever he used to become angry in old days, he will always touch his crown. So he touched his crown, there was no crown. Just a shaved head. Suddenly he remembered what I am doing. There is no sword in it. I am a sannyasi, I have renounced all. Mahavir said, this very moment he has realized this. If he dies, he will achieve to the seventh heaven. That Prasannachandra has realized that what he has been imagining. Just through imagination, the door of the hell was open. Now it has closed. If he dies this moment, he will achieve to the seventh heaven. Hell and heaven are within you, and doors are very close. By right hand you can open one, by the left hand you can open another. Just a change in the mind, and your being is transferred from heaven to hell and from hell to heaven. This goes on continuously. What is the secret? The secret is that whenever you are unconscious, whenever you act unconsciously without awareness, you are in hell. Whenever you are conscious, you act with full awareness, you are in heaven. If this awareness becomes so integrated and consolidated that you never lose it, then there is no hell for you. If the unconsciousness becomes so consolidated and crystallized that you never lose it, then there is no heaven. But fortunately, unconsciousness can never become so consolidated. A part always remains conscious. When your whole being seems to be unconscious, even then a witnessing part always remains conscious. Even while you are asleep, a part is witnessing. That's why in the morning you sometimes say the sleep was beautiful. Sometimes you say sleep was disturbed, nightmares. Sometimes you say I slept so deeply, so peacefully. It was such a great happiness. Who knows this? Because you were asleep, so who knows that you were so happy in sleep? A part has witnessed. A part has been continuously alert, knowing. Who knows that the sleep has been nightmares? That you were disturbed, uneasy, uncomfortable. You were asleep, so who knows? A part has remained a witness. So even in sleep, a part knows. You cannot become completely unconscious. Consciousness once achieved cannot be lost. You can forget it, but it cannot be lost. You cannot reverse the process. So you cannot be eternally in hell, and the Christian doctrine is absolutely false. You can be eternally in heaven. That is the Hindu concept. Hell can only be temporary. It can be for the time being. It is temporal. Heaven can be eternal. And to make a distinction between the momentary heaven and the eternal heaven, Hindus have a different word, moksha. So Hindus have three words. Christians, Mohammedans, Jews have only two words. heaven and hell, these two words for Mohammedans, Christians and Jews. Hindus say narak, hell, swarga, heaven, and moksha, beyond both. A third, and Hindus say heaven is not worth achieving because it can be lost. When the state of heaven becomes permanent, when it cannot be lost, it is moksha. It is absolute freedom. Then the bliss has become your nature. Then heaven and hell have disappeared. Then wherever you are, it will make no difference. You will be in permanent bliss. This third is the aim. But you cannot reach the third if you go on flickering. If you go on wavering between heaven and hell, then nothing can be consolidated, integrated. Then you remain a flux. Then there is no crystallization. Then your being is liquid. Sometimes it moves to hell, sometimes to heaven. Nothing is achieved. A crystallization means you become more and more conscious, you become more and more centered, you become more and more grounded, less and less sleep, more and more awareness. A moment comes when even you are asleep, you are conscious. Ananda used to sleep with Buddha in his room. And a Buddha is worth watching even while he is asleep. So Ananda used to watch sometimes. It is such a beautiful phenomenon. A Buddha asleep. He looks like a small child, innocent, with no burden of the day, no dreaming. Because you dream only because you carry the burden. You dream only because the day is incomplete. Many things you have left incomplete. They have to be completed in the dream. You looked at a woman. You desired her. But that was not possible. Society, the law, the state, the morality, your own conscience. You diverted your attention. You escaped from the woman. But she will follow you in the dream. The act has to be completed. You are going to make love to this woman. If not in reality, then in dream. Only then you will feel at ease. Incomplete act becomes a burden. A Buddha sleeps dreamless because nothing is incomplete. There is no desire. There is no passion. So nothing arises and nothing remains. Things pass as if they pass in front of a mirror. A woman passes, Buddha looks, but no passion arises. The woman has passed, the mirror is vacant again. No dress, no mark of it. Dreamless. Even a child is not dreamless. Even a child has desires. Maybe the desire is not for a woman, it may be for a new toy. It may be for something else. Even a child dreams. Even a cat, a dog dreams. Look at a cat sleeping and you will feel she is dreaming of rats. Jumping, catching, frustrated, sometimes very happy if the rat is caught. Look at a dog sleeping. You can feel he is dreaming about flies or about bones, fighting, sometimes very tense, sometimes very relaxed. But the sleep is disturbed. To look at a Buddha is really beautiful while he is asleep. So Ananda used to watch. Buddha will go to sleep and he will sit and look at him. Such a silent pool of being. Nothing incomplete. Everything, every moment complete and perfect. No dream, no transience. Mind a clear mirror. The stream of consciousness never muddled. Crystal clear. But he became puzzled. Because Buddha will sleep in the same posture. He will remain in the same posture the whole night. He will not change his posture. The same posture he will lie down. That posture has become very famous. It is called the lying posture. You may have seen Buddha's pictures. Statues are there in Ceylon, in China, in Japan, in India. If you go to Ajanta, there is a statue of Buddha lying. That is the posture. And that posture has been reported by Ananda, how Buddha lies. In the same posture, not even changing the sight the whole night. So one day he asked, he said, Bhagwan, everything is okay. One thing puzzles me. You remain in the same posture the whole night. Are you asleep or not? Because if someone is asleep, he will change the posture in his sleep. Are you asleep or not? Even while you are asleep or appear to be asleep, it seems you are alert. It seems you are conscious. It seems that you know what the body is doing. You will not change even the posture unconsciously. Buddha said, yes. When the mind is silent, non-dreaming, only the body sleeps. Consciousness remains alert. Krishna has said to Arjuna in Gita that while you sleep, the yogi remains awake. Even in the night, his sleep is not sleepy. His sleep is only in the body, a rest in the body, a relaxation into the body. But his consciousness is alert. Really, a yogi's consciousness needs no relaxation because it is always relaxed. There is no tension. Relaxation is needed because of tension. The whole day you are so tense. The consciousness has to be relaxed. So yogi's body relaxes because body gets tired. Body is a mechanism. But his consciousness is always alert, continuously alert. It is a continuum of alertness. When your consciousness becomes a continuum, there are not gaps of unconsciousness. When there is no darkness within you, your whole inner temple has become enlightened. The light has reached to every corner. No part of your inner house is in darkness. You are a mukta. You are a free man. And this is what is the meaning of a Christ. You are Christ. Arisen. Resurrected. Now there is no night for you. Only the day exists. Now the sun never sets. Heaven means consciousness. Hell means unconsciousness. Possibility to move is there. When the possibility disappears, there is no hell, no heaven. Then a third The ultimate opens the door. You become free. You become freedom. This is the goal. And Hakun did it well. But this can be done only with a warrior. The warrior responds immediately. He became angry and became totally angry. If there was a businessman, he will smile. Anger will be inside. He will not be ready immediately to cut the head. And Hakun's response would have been useless. You do that. When you are angry, you smile. You are so inauthentic and false that even in anger you lie. Your love cannot be believed because even your anger is unbelievable. Your whole life is a continuous lie. Whatsoever you do, you are not true. Angry, you are not true. You paint it, you smile, you hide it, you sow something else. Then you cannot be made alert that this is the gate of hell. This warrior was like a child. He became totally angry. He became so totally angry that he was going to kill this man. And he had come to be a disciple. He had come in search of a master and he was going to kill this man. He was total. This totalness helped. And if you are total in your anger, you will be total when the anger disappears. If you are false in your anger, you cannot be real in your silence. So when Hakun said, "Look, you have opened the door of hell," immediately he realized. And this can be realized only if you are total and true, otherwise it cannot be realized. You are such a deceiver, you would have deceived Hakun. You would have smiled. That means the door of hell is open, but painted with the signboard of heaven. Looks from the outside, this is heaven, and inside this is hell. You would have been divided and fragmentary. No, it would not have been of much help. This warrior became so total in his anger, he lost all his consciousness. He became anger. He was not angry. There was no one who was angry. He became simply anger. The whole energy became anger. He was mad. At such a peak, things can be realized. Because then they become penetrating. And then somebody can be made alert. Hakun said, "Look!" And he could look. He was a true man. And when Hakun said, "This is the gate of hell," he could realize. When you are total, you can realize. Suddenly the anger disappeared. And because it was total, it disappeared totally. If it was fragmentary, then it cannot disappear totally. It was totally disappeared totally. A deep silence was left behind. This is what I have been telling to you continuously. Be total. Be authentic. Be true. If you are a sinner, then be a true sinner. Don't try to create a facade of being a saint. A true sinner is bound to become a saint sooner or later, and time is irrelevant because a true sinner is true, and that is the point. Sin is not the point. I have heard one peddler was caught, brought to the court. He was peddling without license. He was a new man in that town. But he knew that license is needed. But there were few other persons standing before the magistrate, three women. They were also caught. They were prostitutes without license. This is really a wonderful world. Even governments issue licenses for prostitution. They were caught without licenses. The magistrate asked the first woman, "What do you say? Who are you? And what you are doing?" The woman said, "I am a model." She was lying. The magistrate gave her a sentence for 30 days hard labor. He asked the second woman, she said, "Something somewhere has been wrong. I have been caught wrongly. I am an actress." The magistrate sent her for 60 days. He looked at the third woman. The third woman said, "My lord, I am a prostitute." The magistrate could not believe that a prostitute can be so true, or anybody can confess so truly. He said that authenticity has become so rare. You have shocked me, because I never encounter anybody who is true. I forgive you. I will not give you any punishment. You go. Then came the number of the peddlers. And the magistrate asked what you were doing there. He said, "To be frank, I am also a prostitute." This is what is going on. The faces. False faces all over. Deception. And not even aware that how can you deceive and to whom you are deceiving? There is no one to be deceived. You are deceiving yourself. But trying to escape, trying to hide. This untrueness was not there. That warrior was a true man. Ready to kill or ready to die. He became so inflamed. He became a fire. The door was open. Your hell is also never open completely. You sneak through the holes. Your heaven is also never opened. From the back door you enter. To be total is a basic thing for any seeker, for any one who is in search of silence and truth. Angry, then be angry. Don't think of the consequences. Let the consequences be there. Suffer them, but don't deceive. When enter hell, enter totally. Don't leave half your mind outside. Go into it, pass through it, suffer. Pain is going to be there, but pain gives maturity. Suffering is going to be there, but you can transcend if you understand. And only a total mind can understand. And when anger will disappear, you will become so silent, so meditative. If you love, then love totally. If you hate, then hate totally. Don't be fragmentary. Suffer the consequences. Because of the consequences, you try to deceive. You are a peddler and you say that you are a prostitute. Just because of the consequences, you are never angry, never hateful, then you miss the heaven also. One who is not capable to open the door of hell completely will not be capable to open the door of heaven completely. Go through hell. The path passes through there. Heaven is achieved through hell. This is what is the meaning. Hakun first created hell for the warriors. Because first hell can be created. And hell is easy to create because you are almost ready. You are always ready, always knocking on the door. Afraid, but always ready. Not courageous, but always ready. Not daring, but always ready. It is a turmoil, continuous inside you. Hakun could not have created heaven first. That is impossible because no one is ready. It is very far away. Hell is just nearby, just by the corner. You move and you are in. I cannot also create heaven for you. That's why my all meditative techniques are to create hell first. People come to me, they say, make us silent. Why you insist to go mad? I cannot do anything. You cannot become silent. Be totally mad first. I create hell for you. You have to pass through it. That is the nearest thing you can do easily. Heaven is very far away. And one who has not traveled through hell, he cannot reach to heaven. My insistence is a very considered one. You can understand this story now. Hakun said to the warrior, you and the samurai, your face looks like a beggar. And the samurai cannot tolerate this. This is too much. A beggar? He will not beg even for his life. He can die, but he cannot beg. Immediately, he was touched to the very core. A beggar? Impossible. The sword came out. I am touching you, hitting you, hammering you in all my meditation techniques just to bring your hell out. But you are such a coward. That even if you bring out your hell, it is not total. You play with it. You are not involved in it. You are fragmentary. You become only lukewarm. But lukewarmness won't do. You have to be boiling. Only then you can evaporate. The ego evaporates only from a 100-degree boiling point, not before it. You just become lukewarm. It is of no use. Unnecessary wastage of heat. Again you will become cold. After the meditation you will become cold. Go to the extreme point. in your catharsis, open the door of hell. And I promise you, if you can open the gate of hell, I will open the other gate immediately. It is always open. Once you open the gate of hell, it is just near. This much is enough to say, look, this is the gate of hell. And the gate closes and the other gate opens. Anything more, did I?
What you just said about heaven and hell, how does that tie with what you've been saying about roots and wings? When you say roots into this earth and wings into that heaven, I've got a feeling of being infinitely stretched, but the earth was close and the heaven was far away. What's the significance of this and that?
Yes. This earth is close. Not because it is close, but because of you. And that heaven is far away. Not because it is far away, but because of you. This means this world. This means this body. This means these desires, passions, the physical, the visible. This means all that has been condemned by religions. They are always against this and for that. That means the Brahma. That means the moksha. That means the divine. And this means this material world, this devilish world, this which is condemned. All the religions have condemned this world. I don't condemn it. I want you to give roots into this. All the religions have said that unless you are uprooted from this, you will not get the wings in that. They are against this, the world, the body, the material, the visible. All that you feel near, they are against it. And they are for something which is very far away, abstract. God, Brahma, Moksha, nobody knows. Nobody has any contact with it, no communion, no touch with it. Looks like a dream, looks like a poetry, looks imaginary. All the religions have condemned this and they say, be uprooted. That's why they call sannyas, renouncing the world. Renouncing this, they call sannyas, not I. They create a dualism, not only dualism, but an antagonism between this and that, between time and eternity, between physical and spiritual. To me, roots into this will help to give you wings into that. I don't create any antagonism. There is none. Antagonism comes from a mind which is in conflict, which is in a duality. And out of conflict, theories are created which is a dual, conflicting. I am non-dual. I have no conflict. So I see that not against this, but a flowering of this. I see wings not against roosts, but a flowering of the roots. These trees have wings in the sky. Their branches are their wings. They have roots into the earth and wings into the sky. I would like you to be a strong tree. Roots into this, wings into that. My God is not against the world. My God is in the world. My God is the world. This earth is not against that heaven. There are two polarities of the same phenomena. This appears near to you because your mind is not yet in a state to see the invisible. Your mind is so disturbed, so coarse, that you can see only the visible, the rough. The subtle escapes you. If your mind becomes silent, thoughtless, the subtle will become visible. God is not invisible. He is visible everywhere. But your mind is not yet tuned to see the subtle, to see the invisible. It can be seen. The word means that which cannot be seen, invisible. No. The invisible can be seen, only you need more subtle, refined eyes, that's all. A blind man cannot see that which is visible to you. He cannot see. The eyes can be cured. Then he will see the sunlight and the colors and the rainbow. All that was invisible before, now it has become visible. God is not invisible. You don't have the right eyes, that's all. A tuned being for which the subtle opens its doors. This and that for me is not divided. This reaches into that. That comes into this. That means the far away. Far away for you. Not for me. For me, this is that. Someday, this will be the case for you also. This will be that. This world is God. This visible hides the invisible. That's why my sannyas is not a renunciation. My sannyas is not against anything. It is for the totality, for the whole. Be rooted in the body so that you can have wings in the soul. Be rooted in the earth so you can spread into the sky. Be rooted into the visible so you can reach into the invisible. And don't create any duality and don't create any antagonism. If I am against anything, I am against antagonism. I am against being against anything. I am for the whole, for the complete circle. The world and the God are not divided anywhere. There is no boundary. The world goes on spreading into the God. The God goes on spreading into the world. Really, two words are not good to use. But language creates problems. We say the creator and the created. We divide because language is dualistic. Really, in existence, there is no created and no creator, only creativity, only a process of infinite creativity. Nothing is divided, everything is one, undivided. Language is just like political maps. India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, they are divided on the political map. If you move on the earth and ask the earth where ends India and where Pakistan begins, the earth will laugh that you are mad. The earth is round, it is one. Only on political maps. And maps are false. And politicians are madmen. Madmen who have attained powers. More dangerous than other madmen who live in madhouses. Because they have no power. Language is like political maps. Words divide. Existence is one. Where you end and I begin. Where is the point we can draw a line where I end and you begin? Where? There cannot be any demarcation. The wind goes on flowing in you. You breathe. Even for a single moment, if the wind is not coming to you, the breath is not coming, you will be dead. And the air that was in me just a moment before has left me and has entered you. It was my life just a moment before, now it is your life. And your breath has reached to me, it was your life, now it is my life. Where we are divided. The life goes on flowing. The life is something in between me and you. The tree goes on creating oxygen. You breathe it. If trees disappear, you will disappear. The trees go on changing cosmic rays into food. That's what the fruits are, vegetables are. If they disappear, you will be no more here. They are constantly creating food for you, that's why you exist. This greenery is in a constant process of creating food for you. You depend on it. The clouds go on moving, bringing water for you. The whole is connected. Far away sun sends his rays to you. And those rays are life. If the sun simply disappears, whole life will disappear. And the sun gets his energy from sun. Source, scientists have not been able yet to find that source. If that source disappears, everything will disappear. Everything is related, joined together. This world doesn't exist in fragments, it exists as a whole, as a one whole. To me, this plus that is God. That's why I say a very contradictory thing. I would like to give you two things, roots into this earth, all that is earthly, and wings into that heaven, all that is abstract for you now. all that you cannot even comprehend, all that cannot be conceptualized, roots into the finite and wings into the infinite. And you need not renounce this, because if you renounce this, you are renouncing your roots. That has happened. That's why your monks, your sadhus, look so dead. They have renounced this. They are uprooted beings. Uprooted tree. You are uprooting the part that was hidden in the earth, but soon the flowers will die. The branches will become dead. The leaves will start falling. That's what is happening to your sannyasis, the so-called old sannyasis. That's what is happening. They destroy their roots because they are against this earth. Then their flowering stops. Have you ever seen an old sannyasi who is in a flowering state? Who is blossoming every day? Who is giving new every day? Who is flowing into the unknown every day? No. You will find a rigid, patterned, disciplined, dead being there. A Mahavir may have been alive, but the followers of Mahavir, go and look at them. Look at their faces. You cannot see any flowers there. Their eyes are dull and dead. They are uprooted trees. They have to be pitied. Much compassion is needed. And much help they need. They are ill. Because without roots, they are bound to be ill. They may have desired their sex, but they don't know they have desired their love also. Sex is this, love is that. When you desire sex, you desire love. I say, go so deep in sex that it becomes love. That your very roots start flowering. Your very roots become blossoms. The beginning becomes the end. The seed becomes the tree. Go so deep into it that the other is found there hidden. It is always there. You can control your anger, but then there will be no compassion. Go so deep in anger that anger becomes compassion. Then something, a miracle has happened to you. And then you will be blessed. Then there will be benediction. Then only there is ecstasy. This earth symbolizes all that has been condemned. And that heaven symbolizes all that has been desired. But I don't divide. To me, both are one. And the day will come soon for you too, when you will be able to see that this is pregnant with that. This world is just a womb for the divine. The earthly is just a cover, a protective cover for the unearthly. The seed, the cell of the seed is not against the tree. It is a protection. Matter is just a protection for the divine. Look and always try to find the unity. In unity is religion. In this unity, religion is lost. And avoid being against. Because if you are against, he will become rigid, hard. More hard, more dead. I have heard once it happened that a gang of robbers, by fault, entered a monastery. They were thinking this house belongs to some rich man. The monastery has a look of richness, and in the night they entered. But the monks gave them such a hard fight that they were happy when they succeeded to escape. When they met again outside the town, one of the robbers philosophized. He said, "Not very bad. We have 100 rupees between us." The leader said, "You fools, I have always been saying, avoid monks. We had 500 rupees when we entered the monastery." And I also say to you, avoid monks. If you have 500 flowers, when you will come out of the monastery, you will have only 100. They are enemies, enemies of this. And I say those who are enemies of this are bound to be enemies of that, whether they know it or not. That is not the point. Love this, and love it so deeply that your love transcends this and reaches to that. That's what I mean, roots into this earth and wings into that heaven. Enough for today.